Hello and welcome to NJ Biz Conversations. I'm your host, Jeff Kanaj. My guest today is Chris Marr. He is the chairman and CEO of Ocean First Financial and one of our favorite New Jersey bankers. Chris, welcome back.
Great to be here, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it. We've been checking in with you on time to time about the state of the economy and the banking industry generally and here in New Jersey. Summer's over, everybody's back at work, so it's a good time to sort of check in with you again. And I wanted to start with a little bit about the industry, because the Wall Street Journal had a piece just recently about the difficulty some regional and commercial banks had run into with commercial real estate loans because of a combination of higher interest rates and high vacancy rates. That was sort of news to me because I hadn't really heard much about that in New Jersey. I thought we were kind of immune from that. How much of that have you seen here in the state, or is it confined mainly to banks that were dealing with big city office buildings and things like that? What's the situation here as far as you're concerned?
It's a very confined issue. So it relates to certain parts of commercial real estate, namely urban office or central business right. district office, where if you think about these kind of format buildings that have, you know, kind of tower, high-rise towers in midtown areas where the return to work has been a little more challenged. Interestingly, what we're seeing in the suburban areas and across most of New Jersey is that even office, which you would question, you know, is that where the concern should be? Office has been remarkably strong. And I think it's a combination of over the last decade or so, there's been very little creation of new office in New Jersey, but there has been an increase in demand. And that comes from a lot of different things, obviously things like life sciences, but also some folks leaving either New York or Philadelphia that want to work remotely, but they want to make sure that, you know, the couple of days a week that they do have to go to the office, 2 or 3 days, that they don't have to, you know, endure the commute.
Okay. Yeah. And that was what I thought when I read through the piece. It was actually a very long piece. It went through chapter and verse. They did a fairly extensive analysis of some of the numbers. And it just didn't seem like that was what we were dealing with here in New Jersey. And that's largely because we're a suburban state and it's just a different market. Is that what the dynamic is?
Absolutely. And we didn't have, you know, when you think about the years leading up to COVID, there was a mass urbanization in the country.
Right.
So there was all this kind of building of office space with the expectation that the growth would continue, you know, forever. And you know, we're certainly seeing some more pressure on that. But you also look around the commercial real estate, I'd make two other points. A lot of other commercial real estate is doing surprisingly well. So multifamily buildings, industrial buildings, retail's been surprisingly strong. And although I think it's fair to note, some of these exposures wind up on bank balance sheets. You have to realize that there's a lot of folks in that lending space that are not banks, right? There are life insurance companies and the CMBS pools, and even the GSEs, Fannie and Freddie, are big players in multifamily. They're debt funds. So actually, when you look at commercial real estate as an asset class, less than half of those loans are on bank balance sheets.
Right, and I should be fair. The journal did point that out that a lot of these problems were not regional and commercial banks, regional and community banks. They were actually the kinds of entities that you were just talking about. Okay, so set that aside. What does the industry look like the banking industry in particular look like in New Jersey now? It seems like the economy still is kind of motoring along. We haven't gotten really solid numbers on summer tourism yet, but there was a big expectation. Your bank does a lot of work down shore, and tourism, hospitality, all of those kinds of things are important here. What is the state of the banking industry's health in New Jersey at this point?
Well, I'd start with the state of the economy in New Jersey, which is pretty strong. So, you know, we're seeing near record levels of low levels of unemployment. I would characterize the shore season. You know, we talk to a lot of clients that operate down the shore as a rock solid season, you know, maybe not quite as strong as it was last year, but much stronger than 2019. So very good season for sure. And then when you think about what we do well in New Jersey, you know, pharmaceuticals, transportation, these are sectors that are likely to do fairly well over the next couple of years, especially as like supply chains are starting to normalize and folks are level setting to say, I want a little more inventory. I want to carry a little more raw materials, those kinds of things. So, you know, the whole logistics and industrial sector is still pretty warm.
Okay. And so those kinds of problems, I mean, you and I have talked a lot about them. I've talked a lot to a lot of business owners and executives about those kinds of issues. Those seem to be continuing to fade as problems as far as you can see.
Absolutely. The cost of transportation is coming down, notwithstanding we may have some rise in gas and oil prices lately. But you're seeing much more moderate, if you want to get a shipping container, from Asia or Europe, it's a much more moderate thing. However, there's I think a sector-wide change where folks are just, they want to have a domestic supplier. They want to have a little more cushion in their supply chain. And that translates into a need to kind of build up those cushions, have a little more warehouse space, bring a little bit more demand to U.S. industrial suppliers. And that's been a positive.
Okay, well, that's all good news. And now I know you can't talk about interest rates or monetary policy because of your work with the Philadelphia Fed. You made that clear. We're speaking on September 20th. The Fed is about to make another announcement. The expectation has been that there would be no change. If we get and in fact, the Fed has left interest rates unchanged. I just got that notification on my phone. So that's happened. And I'm not going to ask you for a prediction of directions of rates or anything like that. But what I am curious about is how banks, particularly in New Jersey, particularly in the Northeast, have been adapting to the new interest rate environment. The Wall Street Journal mentioned the piece that we were talking about before, mentioned higher interest rates, that was contributing to the problems that they had identified. Have banks essentially gotten used to the fact that this is the new normal, as it were?
Yeah, we're certainly adapting, right? And most of the prudent bankers, and I'd classify my peers here in New Jersey in that camp, right? Traditional bankers who have been through cycles understand that today's rates are not that unusual. 2 years ago, the rates were really unusual. So if you weren't planning then for this environment, you were going to get caught. But knowing that these things are cyclical, I heard one economist talk about we were at the lowest interest rates in recorded human history in 5,000 years. So if you thought that was going to continue and you built your business around that, you had a world of pain. Obviously, as rates, if rates were to continue to move up, that puts a little incremental pressure on folks that have their balance sheets positioned the wrong way. But I think the whole concern about that and around Silicon Valley and Signature earlier in the year has largely abated. The traditional banks we have here in New Jersey are, for the most part, kind of funded the old-fashioned way, consumers and businesses, and they're doing quite well. So it does clip your earnings a little bit, but it's not something that I would characterize as a crisis.
Okay, and again, I don't mean to overstate the fact that this is a new normal, as you said, and as we've spoken about before. Yes, interest rates are higher than they were 2 years ago, but historically, they're still relatively low, and that should be something that bankers should be able to handle. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's the key is the speed with which things changed. So I think what caused the acute issues were not that the rates moved, but they moved so quickly and so far.
Okay.
Now you have rate changes that are very modest in comparison. So if you think about last year, when the Fed was raising 75 basis points per meeting, that is a very different level of pressure from raising, say, 25 basis points.
Right.
A meeting.
Right.
Very different. So I think it was the acceleration and the speed. Now that things have slowed down in terms of the speed with which they're changing, if you give it enough time, these portfolios roll through and they kind of heal themselves with time.
Okay. Now, obviously, tied to that is the issue of inflation. There had been, again, the same kinds of concerns about supply chain logistics and things like that. Inflation, cost of materials, cost of everything had been really hitting businesses hard. It looks like those kinds of pressures are also easing, that the Fed has really succeeded in at least, if not getting inflation under control, at least making it manageable. Is that an accurate assessment, or how would, well, I don't want to put words in your mouth. How would you describe the situation with regard to inflation? Is it still a major problem as far as you can see?
Yeah, Jeff, I wouldn't consider it a major problem,
okay.
But I also wouldn't consider it resolved yet. So where we're seeing on the positive side, as you pointed out, supply chain much better, labor much better, notwithstanding the strike talks this week with the auto workers. So those pressures,
and nurses in New Jersey still at RWJ, one of the largest healthcare systems, out on strike. Rutgers had a big strike earlier in the year. Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So generally, I would say without those cases, labor, the acute issues over labor have they've declined a little bit. But what's left is two things that are very difficult to control. One is energy, and that's because it can be largely outside our hands. We're seeing that now. And then the second thing, and this is going to be, I think, the long-term big challenge, is residential housing. And because there's a component of this, so the housing starts this week came out lower than expected. So we're simply not building enough new housing units for the people who need new houses. So you could change mortgage rates. You can do all sorts of other things that I would say are kind of short-term fixes. But you know, most estimates I've seen show that the country is 2 million housing units short. So when your question about inflation, I think you have to look at where rents are going. You have to look at where house prices are going. And we need more time to get those under control. And if you can't take inflation out of housing, it'll be pretty stubborn.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the housing starts. If I recall correctly, another piece of that, the sort of optimistic piece of that, was that permits permits for future construction had gone up. Is that enough to offset that, or is that still gonna that 2 million shortage that you mentioned, is that still gonna be there? Is that still gonna be a sort of a chunk that has to be dealt with?
Yeah, well, permits are a number you want to watch, but it can be a little bit lumpy and they can kind of, it can be a little bit of a head fake, right? You see the permits, but then they never turn into shovels in the ground.
That's true.
I think when you consider the reason why we've got fewer housing starts, look, we deal with a lot of developers in the state and the cost of credit is a lot higher, right? Okay. These are generally prime plus credit agreements, right? So if you're going to build housing today, you're paying a pretty high interest rate on that. So we're seeing builders respond by putting more of their own equity into a deal, building as quickly as they can. Absorption has been very good. If you can build it, you can sell it. So there are some positives. And both numbers, the starts and the permits, can be are notorious for being seasonal and lumpy. Right. And so this may just be one report and we'll see it pick up next time.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see. That's certainly worth watching. Another thing I've had a lot of conversations with business owners, executives about was the possibility of a recession. There was a time earlier in the year, probably very earlier in the year, when almost everyone I spoke to was expecting a recession in the second half. Well, we're in the second half. It hasn't seemed to happen yet. It doesn't look like it's going to happen this year. Is that your expectation, or what do you see is in terms of where the economy is going through the end of this year and then into next year? And we'll talk about next year and the year after in a minute.
Well, I'd be very surprised if you saw much change to that in the next few months. But what we're watching really closely, which may lead into your next question, is you have a couple changes coming in the fourth quarter. The first of which is this pandemic extra liquidity that households had. You know, you can track that. That is winding down. So the extra savings is running out and you have student loans restarting. You're starting to see a little stress around credit cards and auto loans in certain credit segments. So that's a sign that the consumer may be getting a little tired here. And as we go into the fourth quarter and then obviously beyond, consumer spending 70% of the economy. So if the consumer slows a little bit, you'll see it pretty quickly.
Okay. And I mean, obviously then we're talking about holiday spending and things like that. Is that going to be the next indicator? What does holiday spending look like in 2023 in terms of what we're looking for? Is that the next thing that we should be watching? If not, what is? What should we be paying attention to?
I think holiday spending is always important, but it tends to be a little bit of a blip. I would be looking at consumers making economic decisions that are more meaningful in their life. How are auto sales going? How are home sales going and things like that? Or what's the price of new homes? You know, are they really kind of maxing out on their ability to afford a payment? I would be looking closely at delinquencies around credit cards, right? Which is that's kind of a canary in the coal mine. And I think we'll start to see some of those numbers. The other big number to watch ultimately is unemployment. Okay. So if unemployment remains low, I think that your odds are for if you have a recession, it'll be a modest one. The other point I make out, Jeff, is that a lot of these forecasts are based on a national outlook. I think regionally, it's going to be a little bit more resilient here in the Northeast. We traditionally are more resilient. We tend to not have the high highs and the low lows.
Okay.
So you could see a national, short, brief, not that painful national recession with things going on pretty well in the Northeast and New Jersey doing just fine.
Okay. And finally, what I was thinking of in terms of next year and the year after was some political uncertainty, major, obviously important presidential election next year. In 2025, a New Jersey gubernatorial election with an open seat. Is that kind of uncertainty, does that produce a drag? Are you worried about that?
I am worried about that. I'm worried about even in the fourth quarter of this year, the potential government shutdown, right? So, I think that anything that takes people's, puts people at unease. And certainly, I can't see a path where the presidential election does not make us uneasy, right? It doesn't matter which camp you're in or where you're from.
Sure.
No one's going into this feeling great. So I do think you're going to see some unease, which I don't think it changes the direction, right? I don't think that causes a recession. But if you go into a recession, maybe it makes it a little bit harder. Or if you're not in a recession, it clips your growth a little bit because people are they're on the fence. They don't want to make those big financial commitments.
Okay. So what are you anticipating? What are you planning for? What do you hear from clients, from customers, from other bankers about the next 6 to 12 months? What do you feel about the economy? You're optimistic, cautious. Where do you come down on what we're going to be looking at for the next, next several months?
Well, I kind of say optimistic, but guarded, right?
Okay.
So optimistic, meaning that things feel better than I thought they would at this point of the year. The numbers are better. The businesses that we bank are telling us they have strong backlogs. They're doing okay. They're making money. They have largely absorbed higher interest rates and they continue to be okay. And that's all good. The guarded point, we talked about the things that are coming in the fourth quarter. That's the liquidity from the pandemic going away. It's
right.
The student loans. It's the government shutdown. We do have the ingredients that could cause a rougher spring than I think we'd hope for. So we're watching that very closely. I think this is an economy where you're cautious, but you should still be making decisions to make investments and, doing the right thing for the long term of your business.
Okay. Well, that's a good place to leave it. We will revisit again, I'm sure. I hope you will come back. It's always good to talk to you and get a sort of a reading on where we are economically. Chris Maher, the chairman and CEO of Ocean First Financial. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff. Great to see you.
Great to see you too. And to everyone else, thanks for watching. Until next time, stay safe, everyone.